You're listening to the Broadway Podcast Network.
Judy was boring.
Hello.
Then Judy discovered Chumbacasino.com.
It's my little escape.
Now Judy's the life of the party.
Oh, baby, mama's bringing home the bacon.
Whoa, take it easy, Judy. The Chumba life is for everybody. So go to Chumbacasino.com and play over 100 casino-style games. Join today and play for free for your chance to redeem some serious prizes. Chumbacasino.com. No purchase necessary. Void where prohibited by law. 18 plus terms and conditions apply. See website for details.
Hello, it is Ryan, and I was on a flight the other day playing one of my favorite social spin slot games on ChumbaCasino.com. I looked over at the person sitting next to me, and you know what they were doing? They were also playing Chumba Casino. Coincidence? I think not. Everybody's loving having fun with it. Chumba Casino is home to hundreds of casino-style games that you can play for free anytime, anywhere, even at 30,000 feet. So sign up now at ChumbaCasino.com to claim your free welcome bonus. That's ChumbaCasino.com and live the Chumba life.
No purchase necessary. VGW. Void where prohibited by law. See terms and conditions. 18 plus.
I wanna be a producer with a hit show on Broadway. I wanna be a producer.
Hello, everyone. This is Michael Arden, director of the revival of Spring Awakening on Broadway. I'm so incredibly humbled by my Tony nomination and our nomination for the show this year to be remembered in a season this incredibly vibrant, diverse, and groundbreaking is truly an honor. And now I'd like to introduce my friend, Ken Davenport.
Praised by Lin-Manuel Miranda as the future of musical theater, SUFS creator Shana Taub makes Broadway history as only the second woman to write the book, music, lyrics, and star in her own original new musical. Don't miss the much-anticipated Broadway debut of the singular artist that Forbes calls visionary and Billboard anoints as one of the most inventive voices in musical theater. SUFS, the original new musical from Shana Taub, is now playing on Broadway at the Music Box Theater. Get your tickets today at SUFSmusical.com. The Outsiders on Broadway tells the story of finding where you belong when the world refuses to accept you. Based on Essie Hinton's beloved novel, featuring new music from Jamestown Revival and Justin Levine, and directed by Danya Taymor, Entertainment Weekly says that, with brilliant staging and some of the most captivating stage fighting currently on Broadway, The Outsiders has the power to inspire an entire generation. Get your tickets today at OutsidersMusical.com.
Hello, everybody. This is Ken Davenport, and this is the Producer's Perspective podcast. So a little story. The first Broadway show I ever attended was The Phantom of the Opera in 1989. And after I saw it, I went right back home, bought a nice frame from the local Walmart-type store, and the first thing I did was frame my playbill. And for the next 5 years of my life, I framed every single playbill I had until I almost went broke on the frames. And I'm not the only one. I bet tons of people out there have been framing their playbills since they got them or saving them in a box because they are valuable in such a memory. Today, we are going to talk to the guy responsible for all those playbills, one of the most powerful and most valuable brands on Broadway. Here is the president of Playbill, Mr. Philip Birch. Welcome, Phil.
Thank you, Ken. It's a pleasure to speak with you today.
So why don't we start with, can you tell us a little bit about the history of Playbill, the first one, how it got its start?
I think the history of Playbill was started by a man named Stern in 1884 when he had the bright idea that he would print a bill, which, as you know, a bill is a single piece of paper that would list the names of the actors, and around the bill he would put the names of advertisers, mostly restaurants in the area. And this bright idea caught on and has been in effect for 132 years nonstop. It's quite an impressive history of success for the theater.
Now, you obviously have not been with it for those 130 years. You're relatively, in the history of Playbill, a newcomer.
I'm a stranger to it, yes. I've been barely here 25 years, so who really am I to the history of Playbill? But the history of Playbill is really quite interesting in that it's only had, you know, three or four owners. It's one of these gems of a company that people buy and seem to keep for better or for worse. The history of Playbill is also reflects the history of theater and the history of the actors Actors' Equity and the unions, and really the showing that the history of theater and the history of needing to show the public who is the creative forces behind these shows, it really goes hand in glove. In 1913, as you know, when Actors' Equity was formed, playbills became more complex because they demanded of the theaters that the people in the shows have a recognition. And people around the shows, or the other creative forces, also put into their demands that they be recognized by the public for their creative influences upon the production. So Playbill played a very important role in recognizing the rights of all the creative forces in the theater community, and the theater owners happily agreed to all this and allowed them to get the credit they were due. So Playbill played a very important role in establishing a important reporting of the wonderful people that were creating the entertainment that people enjoyed.
And this is something to flash forward a little bit. London doesn't have a free Playbill like we do. They still don't.
No, they don't. I was asked by Andrew Lloyd Webber to bring a Playbill to London and was blocked by the oldest problem in the world, which is stealing. People who were in charge of the programs in London apparently were enjoying the old Saturday Evening Post trick of delivering 120 newspapers to a newsstand, and the newsstand were supposed to sell only 100, and they kept 20 for themselves, and the money was passed around. Same thing goes on in London today. And so we couldn't break into that little cash surplus for certain folks. So no, we couldn't break into London. We can't swim in the Thames with cement blocks on our feet. So we decided it was a mistake to pursue this any further. So no, and also in London, they don't have the same protections for the creative forces and the actors that America happily has. There is no obligation to list all the creative forces for the audience. And the only way you really will learn anything about the performance somewhat is to buy the program that they sell, which is terribly dated and not accurate and really almost inevitably has the wrong cast in it. But it's attractive and it's four colors and on nice paper and is sold for £5 or £6 each. Quite a penalty for the theater goer.
So how did you come to be the owner of Playbill? What was your history before it? Were you a theater guy?
It's a fascinating and intriguing tale, which can be described in one word: nepotism. So I was fortunate enough to have been working on Wall Street for a dozen years. And my father, who owned Playbill at the time, told me he was going to sell the company or want to sell the company. And after a series of long discussions and painful negotiations, we came to a very fair and just agreement. And he was very gracious and very, I think, very thoughtful to me and my brother and sister. And we bought Playbill from him over time. And we've enjoyed the ownership of it since 1995, I think, 96.
But you were working on Wall Street at the time, so you weren't even working in the theater.
No, I was a Wall Street Philistine, and we were a gentle sort of crew of monsters who were making the world unsafe for investments, I suppose, for the regular folk of the world. Actually, that's not so true. I worked in mergers and acquisitions, so I only made it unsafe for a small corner of the world.
So with this outside perspective, you know, I love it when people from the traditional business world enter ours, because ours is such a unique
animal, very unique niche.
So what was your first, when you started showing up here in the Playbill offices every day, what was your first sense of like, oh, this is different?
Oh, it was very different. I had been used to doing $100 million deals and working on all kinds of very very much larger activities, and I never had anything that reoccurred in my life. So the idea of coming to a to coming and running a company that actually had an annual schedule where the Tony Awards did occur every June and openings came in this time of year, and the Broadway Cares events were always in November or early December and April. And all these things became clear to me that I had actually entered a community, that I had left a band of mercenaries, of soulless, greedy little urchins, and joined a community of talented and wonderful people who were trying to build something from nothing all the time. It was really quite an eye-opener, and I met so many special and so many creative forces, and it was a true sea change. It was as if I had, you know, left a war-torn Afghanistan and walked into Denmark. It was just a complete sea change, an attitudinal change also. And I think I became a nicer person because of it, because I was around so many talented and sensitive and smart people who were really trying to be very creative and very resourceful and trying to bring joy to people's lives, which was quite a departure from Wall Street.
So those are all the good things about joining in this community. What was one of the hardest things about all of a sudden being thrust into this?
Well, actually, the hardest thing was I joined approximately 93 during the AIDS crisis. And the hardest thing of all was trying to figure out what I could do and what Playbook could do as a company to combat this terrible tragedy. And so that was very hard. And I joined the board of directors of Broadway Cares in 93. 94, I was named the treasurer of the board. And I worked very, very hard on being a good treasurer. And actually, I've been treasurer of the board for 21 years now. 22, oh my gosh. And it's been one of the great rewarding work of my life. And so that was I would say emotionally, that was, and intellectually, the hardest challenge I've ever seen anyone face. And the heroes of our industry that stepped up and worked so hard to try to help our community through this devastation. It was a very meaningful battle that we still are fighting, but we have made a lot of progress and we continue to fight forward. But I think that was the hardest thing. I mean, everything else compared to that was really quite simple.
So obviously everyone knows Playbill as the magazine they get when they sit down in the theater, but that is, of course, just the tip of the iceberg of the brand. And what I've noticed over the last 5 years, especially from 10 years, is the brand seems to have exploded. All of a sudden, there are all these other things going on. Tell us about how you've led Playbill into the 21st century.
Well, I've led and misled Playbill into the 21st century on a number of ideas. I think that all companies, no matter how old or young they are, and Playbill being 132 years old is a older company, though quite young for an Irish pub, it's quite old for an American company. I think that the key is to maximize a brand's value. And Playbill is a brand because it has a very meaningful message for the people who interact with it. Playbill is always there in the theater. It provides a lot of continuity to the audience. It gives them help in enjoying what they're about to consume. It's a souvenir to remember what they enjoyed and to refer back to if they choose to save them, which they do a lot, apparently. You're not the only one. Sometimes we sell 20,000 binders a year, people who are collecting these playbills, and we're happy and grateful to sell them to them. This kind of association with Broadway has been very meaningful. And so the brand has grown with Broadway, and the brand, because it's been so loyally there in all of New York and the rest of the country over the last many years, people associate our brand with I think a very stalwart company, and our audience is a great audience. So we've tried to build upon that relationship we have with the audience in a meaningful way. We're not producing satellite decoders. We're really trying to do all things that are related to people's enjoyment of the theater and to be a part of their theatrical world. And so we've created a number of ideas, some good and some bad, but mostly good, that have helped people enjoy theater more, have helped young people enjoy creating theater themselves. And we've also tried to build upon the love of theater and the love of doing other things outside the theater. For instance, this last January, we had we're partners with Mischief Management, and we partnered with them to create, help them create and to be a part of Broadway Con. Broadway Con was a surprising success for everyone. I was surprised only because I'd never participated in a Broadway Con or a Comic Con like event before. But we had 5,100 people come up, even in the snow, to enjoy and to express their love of theater. And I was so impressed by their enthusiasm and their passion. And there's a good example of a brand extension. We will be doing Broadway Con in 2017 in January at the Javits Center. And we have rented the Javits Center's north and several other massive rooms, which when you look at them when they're empty, you think that, my God, how would we ever fill this? And because they are really unbelievably big. One room, I know we could fit 3 747s in. I mean, it's just so huge. But these will be the room where it happens in January 2017. And just this week, we put the tickets for sale for January, and we have sold hundreds and hundreds of thousands of dollars of tickets in a matter of days. So these brand extensions are working. We started a company called Playbill Travel, where we do Broadway cruises, because in business, you always want to try to find that Venn diagram. And you all know what a Venn diagram is. It's when you take two circles and you intercept them. And the part that is intercepted is the area of your focus, so that when two circles intercept and there's space where they both overlap, that part is your target. So in that Venn diagram, Playbill Travel takes people who love theater and people who love cruises, and when they're where they intersect, that's where Playbill Cruises is focused. And so we've been able to, we're at this point, we're literally chartering ocean liners. And we're filling them with people who love theater and love cruising. And we bring along wonderful Broadway stars who enjoy the trip as well. And it is a hoot. Everyone loves the cruises. I love the cruises. We just advertised a cruise last week. We didn't even advertise it. We sent an email out to our past passengers. We're sold out without even advertising it. So the brand of Playbill is working, but it would never work without Broadway as the foundational part beneath it. So these are kind of the brand extensions we've made. And the first one you're thinking about, I guess, is Playbill.com, which we started in 1995. And that was a leap of faith. No one knew it.
There's no DSL. It was like dial-up back then, AOL, maybe. Like what kind of online activity could you
I think you had to pedal, if I recall. You had some generator going while you actually got online. We actually started as a partitioned part of CompuServe and Prodigy, you may remember. Most of you or may not be old enough to remember that the internet once really didn't work. And we tried that for a while. And then I just discovered that I discovered something called the World Wide Web, which no one ever uses that phrase anymore. And I just decided that was the future in 1995. And we just went full force into it because I felt that people wanted more information about theater. And Playbill.com really does provide an enormous amount of theater news. And we still to this day are proud of the fact that we provide the best level of news of any reporting organization on theater in the world. And we have 30, 40 stories a day. And I think that people want that kind of information. Baseball and theater are a lot alike. Most people think about baseball, watch baseball, and discuss baseball far more than they attend baseball. Same thing with theater. There are people out there who want to talk about theater. There are people out there who want to read about theater. And so we built Fable Online based upon the fact that people wanted a lot of information about theater because they loved it. And we were right. People do want information. And people are now getting the majority of their information online about theater in 2016.
And that site obviously is certainly my favorite theater site by far, and I say that as a producer who always advertises on Playable because I know those people are there. It's changed a lot. Just went through a big redesign, right?
Yes, we did. We just redesigned it. It's a much more modern site, and I find it to be a easier site to participate in because it's less stimulating and it's more focused on the material that we want people to choose from. I think that all sites have to go through a little bit of a changeover period where people have to get used to the new site. And of course, we've heard people who hate the new site. We've heard people who love the new site. And it is definitely age related. I did have to say to one person who complained a lot about it that I did say, "Mom, you have to get used to it." And the hamburger on the left, I'll put the word menu under it. And if you will remember that, it will work better. And that almost mollified her. And so I think we made progress.
Can you give us any exclusives, any new Playbill initiatives that are in the garage right now waiting to be unveiled?
Well, yeah, we're working on a new Playbill con, as Broadway con, as we talked about. We have our Playbill travel area is beginning to go into river cruises after our ocean cruises. We're beginning to chat about with some investors about maybe doing a Playbill hotel in Times Square, which would be a huge undertaking. We would not own it. We would not be. We could never have the money to do something like that. We would simply be a licensor of our name and a participant in the hotel's marketing and being a part of New York. But I think that's a program we're trying to push forward with several investor groups. It's a difficult time for hotels in Times Square in 2016 because people don't want to stay in hotels longer than they sleep and eat breakfast. Because when you stay in Times Square, the last thing you want to do is spend your day in your room reading a book. I mean, really, it's much like a theme park. And I've argued that Broadway is like a theme park and the shows are like rides, and we could use a hotel. And so maybe that would convince people to do it. But I think that the hotels are suffering from also the OTA problem, the online travel agency problem, where the hotels have done such a good job that you can't tell the difference between a Hilton or a W or a Sheraton or a Renaissance or a Marriott. And so because they're doing such a good job, the online travel services are just waiting for the managers to make a mistake, and then they make a mistake and they charge $195 for a room, and no one's making any money. So I think a theater-centric hotel would do much better because it would appeal to a very, very loyal and very theater-centric audience, and we would have some fun things in the hotel as well that would, I think, make people want to stay there.
I think if you need some letters from people to your investors saying that they would stay there. There are thousands of listeners right now that I think would all stay there. I know I would stay there. I've actually blogged before about how there's no Broadway Walk of Fame, like a star, like right. The Hollywood Walk of Fame or a Broadway Museum in Times Square. This Playbill Hotel could be all of those things.
I think it could be a lot of those things. I'm not sure we have enough sidewalk to really cover the Walk of Fame as it should be covered, but I think we could have a very important display of Broadway memorabilia and history in the hotel. And I think we could have a great deal of good entertainment at the hotel and themed rooms and, you know, really celebrating the history of theater in New York. And so I think that people really will enjoy this idea when and if we bring it to fruition. So it's one of our projects. We're not going to own the hotel, so it's not going to be ours to command, but it will be, we will have participation in it, and I hope it happens in the next, year and a half, 2 years. It should, if it does happen at all.
Well, I'm in. Just let me know.
Thank you.
One of the things I noticed about the website that is different from any of the other theater websites out there are you have no reviews on your site.
Correct.
And no message board.
Correct.
Why?
Very good question. And number one, reviews are very, I think reviews are not Playbill's role. There's a lot of people reviewing theater. There's a lot of people hectoring theater. There's a lot of people with a lot of opinions in this world. Our website and our magazine is about being positive about theater, presenting it to the audience. You make your own decisions. I think it would be unfair for Playbill to review a show, and the producers have to take our magazine. We have to be in their theaters. And if we were to review a show poorly, I think it would be a cinder in the eyes of a producer that one of our writers didn't like it, and therefore we would say that. We have too much. I think Playbill is the good housekeeping seal of Broadway, and I think that if we didn't like something, I think that would be very damaging versus just another opinion. So I think you have to be fair and say, you know, we're going to let other people review. We're going to let we want our audience to experience as much theater as possible. And there's good in every show. I don't believe there's ever a show that isn't worthy of seeing, because there's always something in it that is quite excellent. There's always some actor or actress doing a good job, or there's some wonderful group of songs worthy of listening to. I don't buy the fact that you should miss a show because someone didn't like you. You have to make your own decisions. So that's reason one and many more why we don't have reviews. Why we don't have message boards is a decision I made years ago, because I saw the same people, the same socially misperceptive, angry, snarky people dominating message boards constantly and scaring off people who would like to make a contrarian opinion to those theater police. And therefore, I felt that it was a waste of time. And I look at theater blogs, theater boards, you know, often, and they always descend into hell. I mean, it just takes about six or seven opinions, and all of a sudden, all hell breaks loose, and nastiness shows up, and opinions go awry, and somebody gets called something. And I think they're a waste of time. And by the way, they're a waste of time on a lot of sites. You go to the Washington Post and 12 things in, somebody hates the president, somebody hates some Dick Cheney comes up. And I mean, it's just awful. So I think mostly the message boards are filled with the truly unsettled undereducated. So I don't have a big respect for that. Plus, I also saw some kind of disturbing stuff on our message boards where people started doing role-playing on it, and it just seemed like a feeder farm for, all kinds of child molesters. So I thought, forget that. We're not doing that either. So I just shut it down and said, let people make their own opinions elsewhere.
I think that's a very fair approach and just to clarify for the listeners out there, when you say the producers have to have the playbills, because your deal is with the theater, right?
Correct.
The theaters make a deal with you to have the playbill. So as a producer, I go in, I get the playbill, and we're very happy to get it. But I think that's a very fair approach. You're not going to have people review when I don't have a choice. I could have to carry that review in the magazine as they're watching the show.
That would be really terrible. But also, the role that Playbill provides is a critical one, because the contract that the theater owners have with all of the unions states within those relationships that they really have to have a program in the theater that highlights the creative forces behind the show in that theater. It's of no cost to the producer or the theater owner that we are there, but someone has to provide this service to fulfill the contractual obligations for instance, Actors Equity. There has to be bios on a piece of paper, handed, literally proffered is the word in the contract, to every individual patron. So This is an important task that producers are very terrible at fulfilling. And by the way, my dear friend Jimmy Niederlander Sr. once said to me, that was the worst decision he ever made. And he said to my father as well, when he decided to produce his own playbill for the Palace Theater back at Sweet Charity days. He said, I'm never doing that again, he said. And I appreciate that very much as well. He's a wonderful man. But it's hard to produce because the rules are very complicated, as many people know. The inside of a playbill has to change weekly to reflect the accurate cast members. And if there's someone out in the midweek, there has to be a slip in there that describes who's out and who's in with a bio as well. And so it's not easy. And, you know, and someone say, why do you have to change weekly? I say, well, a lot of people's cats change names and their new boyfriends and new girlfriends and thanking another deity this week. But the casts do change, of course. And people don't realize how often a Broadway cast changes in larger shows. It's quite continuous.
So you said something about the actors' union requires that the patrons get on a piece of paper. And then you talk about how difficult it is, and I'm sure expensive it is, and time-consuming. And in the green world we live in now, do you ever think there will be a time when Playbill is purely digital and there is no magazine?
People have said that, but people love their Playbills. And without that receipt, without that souvenir, without that experience, I think theater will be less of the experience that people enjoy, because it is part of the theater going process. And the digital effect will be that the shows will be interrupted by light, and that people do refer to their playbills in the middle of the shows. They do want to read them all the time. And, you know, take a look at, you know, how many acts there are, who is this actor, people do use their playbills during the show. If it was digital, it will destroy the main role of the audience, which is to be unnoticed and to be quiet and to participate as a spectator in the story that's being told. Digital things are very intrusive, and they can really wreck a performance. So I think, and I, you know, I've talked to a lot of people, even the Broadway Green Alliance, and they're not against playbills. We do use recycled paper as much as possible. We recycle our playbills. We take them out of theaters and we recycle them regularly, because paper is expensive and recyclers want the paper back. So we do a very good job. And plus, there's no real harm if somebody keeps their playbill and puts it in a frame or a binder. It doesn't seem to meet a landfill that way. And it is, by the way, a natural product. So it's all just paper and clay. So it's not very damaging.
My favorite form of free advertising is the playbill. As I go on at a subway station on my way home at about 10:30 at 11 o'clock and look at all the people holding their playbills in their hand, it's a conversation starter for sure.
It's a fun, you know, that's a fun train to go home on. You always see all the actors, and you see the patrons, and you see the musicians all going home. And it's really quite fun. At 50th Street Broadway line, it is a convention. It's like a little Broadway con on the train. It's really quite funny that all the actors and actresses and musicians and all the other creative people are on those trains. And you could really you just start recognizing people, and you start to say, how'd the show go? And, you know, it's just quite a fun moment. That's a little fun secret on Broadway, that 50th Street Station going uptown.
Yeah. It's the cheap version of Joe Allen's Bar Central.
Yeah, it's all at $2.50. Then you get home.
Have you ever thought about producing yourself?
No, producing is very hard, Ken. What you do is really quite impressive. Producing is a real art form, and it's a detail world of endless details, and it's a very risky environment, and it's wonderful, and I admire producers for their pluck and their creativity and their I think really, there were risk quotients. I mean, very few people understand risk in business, and producers really do understand risk. And they play that risk game as well as any on the trading floor at Goldman Sachs. I mean, it's really quite impressive what producers are able to do. I always describe to my friends what it's like to be a producer, like the guy in that circus ring spinning plates. He just has to keep the plates spinning, has to keep spinning, running over that plate, slowing down. He's got to spin that one up. He just keeps circling and spinning the plates. I mean, there's so many plates he's got to keep going and keep spinning, and he can't let any of them hit the ground and break. I think it's very impressive what all our producer friends are able to do. And it's a real important process for a theater, of course. And to learn to be a producer is not available in any business school. To learn to be a producer, you got to work for a producer. This is one of the last journeyman, you know, kind of occupation in America. It is, you really only learn by trial by fire, right? How'd you learn?
Yeah, I learned by working for lots of producers, exactly. Actually. And then I learned the most just by getting it out there and producing something myself and having flames nip at my butt. Absolutely. Every single day, for sure.
It's truly one of the last great entrepreneurial events. I have the joy of once and now and then owning being involved with horse racing, and that is somewhat like producing, because producers do something which is so magical, is they make something from nothing. And they just truly they just find talent, they find creative teams, they find stories, they build a entire system and a machine that's supposed to come together and be an active, breathing event. And it's quite amazing to you. They take something and take nothing and turn it to something from 0 to 60 miles per hour. It's really quite impressive. It's a lot like horse racing, where you have a horse that's born and you hope and pray he's healthy and strong and is fast and he'll run well, he'll stay healthy and nothing will go wrong. And that's the same kind of thing. That's as much producing as I could do as oversee a horse here and there. But producing is hard.
You see a lot of advertisements on your site from shows. What do you think the biggest mistake that Broadway makes in terms of its advertising?
The biggest mistake is not being able to communicate to the average person what the story, what the essence of the show is about. People are overstimulated in 2016. A person could receive thousands of stimulations a day. And unless your message is clear, unless your message is concise, it's very, very hard to get people's attention and to be able to find that tribe. Broadway is a series of tribes. It's not a singular audience. There are people who only go to musicals, there are people who only go to plays, there are people who only go to good plays and musicals, there are people who only go to really, really good musicals and once in a while a really great play. There are people who only go to plays with a star, and there are people who only go to shows that are, you know, depressing. I mean, these are groups of people on Broadway, and for a producer to be successful communicating to all these tribes, they have to be able to bring a clear and concise message of all the positives of this show and why it's worth seeing. And sometimes it's not enough to decry a star. It's not enough to, you know, just show a good looking person and a story. You have to hit the audience up on a number of angles, because we're dealing with a vast array of consumers who consume differently. There are people who have to see everything. There's people who only have to see hits. There are people who only want to see shows that are controversial. You have to figure out how you're going to hit these groups carefully. give them the message that they're able to enjoy and be able to, maximize their theater going power. For instance, if you talk to real experts on Broadway about ticketing and the audience's behavior, 60% of the people in the audience are seeing their fifth or sixth choice. They're not seeing their first five choices, four choices. One, they can't get tickets, or they might have actually seen it. So now you're dealing with the next tier. And so a lot of producers don't understand that this is a massive population. These are people who already buy into the fact that they're going to see a Broadway show. And if you study the amount of time between purchasing and actually seeing a show on the age of a show, you could really understand that, well, I have to really appeal to people who haven't yet made a decision. And so there are all these different tribes that you must hit up effectively. And so the mistakes that I see are the producers who don't understand the herd. And if you don't understand the overall herd of different types of behavior, you're only going to appeal to a part of it. And then all of a sudden, you will have this weird moment where your sales just drop. Like, what happened, you'll say. We were going well, and boom, we hit a wall. And that's because you just appealed to a singular tribe, and you didn't go across the spectrum of all the tribes. So that's what I've learned by observation, if that's helpful.
All right, my last question, which is my genie question.
Oh, goody.
I want you to imagine that the genie from Aladdin comes to your office door, yeah, knocks on it, and says, Mr. Bursch, I want to thank you for your contributions to the theater, and I want to grant you one wish. What's the one thing that drives you so crazy about Broadway, that makes you mad, that can get you pounding on the table, that you would want this genie to wish away with the rub of his lamp?
I probably would want the empty seats of Broadway to be used better for underprivileged people. There are so many empty seats. There's so many people who should be sitting in those seats. I so wish there was a methodology of getting those empty seats, which are going to go to waste, to young people who we can impress with our great, great product, and make them lifelong fans. There's so much we can do to share the wealth of our resources. It won't cost us any money. But I would like to see us have a system in place where the 50 or 60 empty seats at all the balconies can be put into a pool for teachers and students and people like that who would truly, really fall in love with what we do.
It's a great answer, and I want to thank you for sitting down with us, and thank you for letting me adorn my walls with your playbills. Until the next time, I'm Ken Davenport. This was the Producer's Perspective Podcast.
I'm gonna be a producer. Look out, Broadway, here I come.
They say well-behaved women seldom make history. Just ask the Supps. A vibrant and wholly original new musical, Supps celebrates the real women who changed history and their story that is more timely than ever. See the show Variety calls an epic tour de force new musical. Deadline Cheers is a rare Broadway feat and leaves audiences inspired to keep marching. Supps has arrived on Broadway, and not a moment too soon. Get your tickets today at suppsmusical.com. If you love Broadway gossip, you are not going to want to miss any episode of this podcast, Singular Sensation, The Triumph of Broadway. Plenty of dramas unfold on stage, but the best dramas unfold backstage. And there were no bigger dramas than behind the scenes of Sunset Boulevard.
So you were being crucified over here, but
yeah,
not there.
No. No, because I was turning in a performance that would get standing ovations. Excuse me.
So check out my podcast, Singular Sensation, for all the juicy and gory details of Sunset Boulevard.